This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today, we're going over White Lotus, Part 3, Mysterious Monkeys. Please tell me that's what it's actually called. Or did you make that up? Okay, good, good, good.
No, I kept calling it Mystery Monkeys, Mischievous Monkeys, Manic Monkeys, and had to go back and I'm like, oh, Mysterious Monkeys. All right, that kind of sort of makes sense.
Just another Manic Monkeys, oh. So, if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, well, I mean, we're in episode 3. Gotta go back to the first episode. It's totally worth it. We're having so much fun with this series. Aside from Steve Zahn, would I ever watch it in real life? No, but I'm completely enjoying doing this recording because we are having a blast.
Discomfort is growth.
Sure.
It is. That's what I heard on Jay Shetty. Anyways, hey, gentle listeners.
Are you ready
for one dry kiss? Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-com movies, rom-com series, dark comedy series for the month of October. We are doing White Lotus, the series on Max. And I am here with my very good friend who is gracious enough not to steal the baby shower from my niece, even though it was her birthday, Corinne Edding.
And I am here with my bestie, who would not steal all my drugs and use them for her own nefarious purposes, Miss Tamara Cosio.
Well, not now, but maybe when I was 19, that was a different time. If you had drugs. I'm just kidding. I
wouldn't. No, you wouldn't know.
Thank you. Thank you for your trust in me. That's very nice.
I got trust in you.
So we are fresh off of our day together because Corinne was lovely enough to come up for the baby shower for one glorious day. We were reunited. It was awesome.
And it felt so good. Yes.
Except for the weather is freaking blazing hot in Fresno. Oh, a balmy 102.
Look, there were tons of canopies. There were big fans. We stood in front of one of the really big fans. It was great. I was here for it. Eventually, people got in the pool, so I was like, I am ready. I threw on my suit, and I jumped on in. They're like, there's steps over here. I was like, yeah, bye, push.
Why everybody got in the pool during the last hour is beyond me. I was like, nobody's going to get in the pool. Corinne's like, I brought my bathing suit. I don't think anybody's going to swim. Corinne's all, I got my bathing suit. An hour before we left, sploosh. I'm like, God damn it, people are in the pool? And Corinne's like, yeah. Splish, 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 splish.
I brought a towel. I brought my bathing suit. And then what was awesome is I got two times the pool because your sister was generous enough to let me come over and hang out. And we got to go to her pool, which was totally empty and very lovely.
Isn't her complex nice? My sister lives in a so nice, lovely condominium complex. It's gated. They have a nice clubhouse and a nice pool with a spa. And we took advantage of all of that except for the clubhouse.
Yes.
So it was very nice. Got to visit my old stomping grounds. Got to see my aunt, who was having some health scares earlier this year. So that was all nice. Overall, a pretty good visit.
I agree. But I wish I'd gotten to see your Aunt Connie. But you know. You know what I haven't shared about in a while?
What?
My love life.
Oh?
Yes.
Oh, hold on. My headphone fell out. Wait. Wait. Don't say anything.
You just don't want to hear what I have to say. I see how it is.
Oh, I would have let you keep talking and just not told you my headphone was gone if that was true.
Gentle listeners, I have purposefully withheld this information from Tam so it'll be fresh to her listening ears.
Uh-oh. You're pregnant.
With twiplets. Twinplets.
Twiplets?
Yeah. So I was dating two different guys at the same time.
Right.
Tamara already knows this. They both knew I was dating other people. I was very, like, open about that. I wasn't trying to, like, you know, put one over on somebody, you know?
Right. And but you weren't serious with either of them, so no, that's a big deal.
I got to the point, though, where I was just, like, I didn't feel right dating two people at the same time. So I regretfully informed guy number one that I didn't like dating two people at once, and I was breaking things off with him, not because I didn't like him or wasn't interested in him slash dating him, but just because there was one person too many. And
right. It's hard to keep up for long periods of time.
Yeah, he lived several hours away. This other person, the guy number two, lived like half an hour away.
Okay.
Yeah. So shortly after I made this decision, though, like everything went to shit with guy number two, which is fine. I kind of figured that things would like resolve themselves one way or another definitively with guy number two, and they did.
Uh-huh.
And so guy number two, like I felt more chemistry with him when I was like with him, like things were like really good. But when we were not together, he was just completely MIA for the most part, except occasionally he would send me a short text or something like that. It was not good. I felt a lot of anxiety. I felt like I was like, does he even like me? I knew that he liked me, but I was just like, why isn't he talking to me? You know, that kind of a thing.
Right.
And I was like, you know what? I want a guy who brings me peace in my life. I don't want a guy who brings me anxiety in my life. I was like, fuck this noise. I want somebody who supports me, that I can have a fun time with, who brings me peace, who is like joy, fun, kindness. And so guy number one qualified on like most of those points, and guy number two qualified in the joy, fun category, and then was like, I mean, he was kind too, but like the other stuff lacking in. And so I broke things off with guy number two. I reached out to guy number one and I was like, hey, because I said when I broke things off with him, I was like, I am interested in you. If things don't work out, I will reach out to you and see if you're interested. And he has not returned my texts, so I blew that one up too, I'm pretty sure. But he was not a second choice. It was just like a matter of
location.
Location.
Logistics.
Yes. And I told him, I said in the text to guy number one, I was like, hey, if you're interested in giving this another shot, I will just be dating only you, nobody else. And, you know, we'll see how things go. But regardless, that did not work out. And I understand how he could feel like he was a second choice, or it was a major like curse your son but inevitable betrayal moment, or like whatever. But I tried to be as transparent as possible. And, you know, I'm going to say the only guy now that I really want to yell at me, which generally speaking, I don't want guys yelling at me. But
I was going to say
Christian Walker from the YouTubes or the TikTok or whatever. He's
nervous. You're anxiety ridden. You feel jumpy. He doesn't relax you. You're a hostage to your emotions and possibly your trauma. That thing is not chemistry.
This guy, I love him so much when he's like, I am reading you. Get it together, girl. And I was like, yes. Yes, I will get it together. I will get it together.
And then the next day comes and you're like, I'm not together.
No, I'm like, I'm tired of all the bullshit. So I, Corinne, on this very podcast, pledge to not date anyone unless guy number one contacts me until 2025.
Wow. Ta-da!
I know.
Goodness gracious. That's stinky. I'm sorry that happened.
Yeah. I want somebody who's resilient enough to be able to take care of themselves, to be there for me, et cetera, et cetera. So it is what it is. Ooh. And it is a bummer, but like, I can't control anybody except for myself. Well, I can't even really control myself most of the time, but I have a better chance at it than anybody else.
On a lighter note,
oh,
I tried something for the first time when we were coming back from the Fresno.
Oh, tantric sex?
I went... No, not while I was driving. That would be dangerous. But I tried Cracker Barrel in Bakersfield.
Cracker Barrel! Oh my gosh!
It's the first time I ever went there. And they had a motherfucking shepherd's pie with a tater tot and cheese topping.
Ooh.
And I about died and went to heaven. It was amazing. And then they had the audacity to have the cutest fucking gift shop in the front of the store. I spent $200. I didn't. Larry spent $200 because I am unemployed. Actually, he spent like $99 and I felt really bad because we bought like all these like little artisan candies and they had so many cute Christmas and Halloween decorations that I just had to slap my hand away from. So I'm like, you don't need that. You want that, but you don't need that. You want that, you don't need that. And I just, you know, I kept telling myself in my head, don't buy any of these stinking cute Christmas decorations, because if you really want them, it'll just be an excuse to drive back over here and go to Cracker Barrel again. But I heard him paying the tab and it was like $99. And I was like all full of all kinds of regrets in the car. And I was like, see, I'm so glad we didn't get that snow globe that was shaped like a lantern that had the cute Christmas scene inside that lit up, because that was like $36 and that was way too much. And I was like, we already spent money on dinner or lunch and then we spent money in the gift shop. And he was like, no, that was for everything. The $99 was for our lunch. And our two take-home meals and everything we got in the gift shop. And I'm like, oh, well, let's go back in then.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's like, okay, we can swallow that. Yeah.
Yeah. And they had the stupid thing. I love their food so much that they're like, hey, do you like our food? And I was like, yes, yes, I do. Well, since you ate in our restaurant, you can take home one of our to-go meals for $6. Does that sound good? And I was like, I will take two. And they were not as good as the actual restaurant, but still really tasty. And I was like, I am so glad this place is nowhere near me, because it's fucking delicious and I would be here all the goddamn time. Thank you, Cracker Barrel.
Cracker Barrel.
Mm-hmm.
Where the tots come on shepherd's pie. Yum. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was like sitting there deconstructing it. I'm like, okay, how can I make this at home?
You mean for Corinne?
Oh, no, you don't want that, because I tried making meatloaf like them and failed. It was still tasty, but it was fall apart meatloaf. I called it sloppy Joe casserole because that's pretty much what it was, because they put too much wet stuff in there and it did not stick together.
But I have faith in you and your shepherd's pie skills, because you have extensive shepherd pieing. And then you add tater tots into the mix and cheese. You can't go wrong. Come on now.
I don't know. This was a completely different animal. It was completely different. And usually I am a shepherd's pie connoisseur / expert. Uh-huh. So if it was familiar or close to what I make, I'd eat it and I'd be like, oh, yes, it's... I'd give you the recipe. But this one was completely different. A completely delicious difference. But anyways, speaking of delicious things, Corinne.
Yes.
Did you remember to write down all the shenanigans that happened in our last episode to recap and remind us what's going down at the White Lotus?
Damn, Skippy, it was the very first thing that I did before I even started working on the script itself.
Nice.
I know. I'm growing. Oh, speaking of which, dude. I just turned 48. It's my birthday, y'all.
Oh my God. Happy belated birthday, Corinne.
I would like to thank Allows, excuse me for my pronunciation, Opinion for rating us recently, giving us 5 dry kisses and an I hear you with a heart.
Oh, she heard it was your birthday?
Yeah, so it was like an early birthday gift for me, so I appreciate that. And if anybody else wants to give me glorious birthday gift ratings and reviews, I will take them. Thank you. I'm just a giver like that.
Corinne gets 5 dry kisses because she's an awesome person. Oh, you weren't talking about me. You were talking about our gentle list. I got you. Sorry.
Yeah,
but you still get 5 dry kisses.
I like it. I'll take it. I'll take all the ratings and reviews I can get that are nice. For my birthday, they got to be nice. I'm sorry. I'm just saying that. So here's our synopsis. Do you need the lowdown on all the shenanigans going on at the White Lotus last week? Well, do I have a treat for you?
Oh my God, I totally heard you saying that in Stefan's voice from SNL.
Stefan, that is so familiar.
Oh my gosh, Stefan. The hottest club in New York City this week is Baruga. It has everything. No? Oh my God, no. I'm going to send you a bazillion of him now. I'm going to send a bazillion reels with him. He's awesome.
Did you see what's his name as Mu Peng or Wu Peng, the hippo?
No.
I'm going to send you the link to that. Okay. Anyways, back to the show. Mu Dang.
Somebody from SNL?
Yeah.
Was it Bo and Yang?
Yes. He was fan-fucking-tastic.
Mu Peng, the hippo.
The baby, like the little baby hippo that's like a micro hippo.
My nephew was showing me all kinds of Mu Peng clips and he was like, oh, look at Auntie. And it's all Mu Peng the hippo. And I'm like, why are you showing me this? He's like, it's Mu Peng. And I'm like, I don't know who that is. Mu Peng. So he just sat there and let me watch 10 minutes of Mu Dang with my nephew. So by default, I do know who that is. But I did not see Bo and Yang play him on SNL, sadly. But I will definitely look it up.
It's so fucking amazing. I have it saved. I'm going to send it to you. I just didn't send it to you because I thought you'd already seen it.
No.
Okay. Hose! Back to the synopsis. The Mossbrockers. Uh-huh. Mama Nicole, Dad Mark, son brother Quentin, and the Diva twins, daughter slash sister Olivia, and friend Paula. Oh, those are the Mossbrockers slash Paula, whoever her last name is. Anyways, Nicole has met the young woman, Rachel, who wrote a hit piece on her, implying that she got her position through lawsuits and the Me Too movement. She's also been supporting her husband, Mark, who has been going through it with his cancer scare and been working a lot while on vacation. That's all that's been going on with Nicole. So far, she is one of the least sketch people other than her compulsion to rearrange furniture in this series. Don't know if that'll change.
Very normal, very natural compulsion to just rearrange furniture in a perfectly nice hotel room. Cool.
No surprise that Mark has been paranoid about his health because he's near the age his dad was when he died of cancer. But surprise, dun 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 dun, Mark finds out from a phone call with his uncle that his dad didn't die of cancer. What? But actually died of AIDS. His dad was leading a secret double life away from his family as a gay man. So now Mark has more to process. His whole life has been a lie. Quinn is being menaced by his sister and is negotiating his dad, who's really trying to bond with him. And the Diva twins, Olivia and Paula, lost their purse of drugs and continue to be insufferable. Also, Paula is gaslighting Olivia about a guy that Paula's been interested in and she's been hanging out with, but to hear it from Paula, there's absolutely nothing going on there. No, nothing to see here.
Uh-uh.
Armand, who has the Diva Twin bag of drugs, is losing his shit, continues to give mediocre customer service, and by the end of the episode has broken his sobriety, probably due in part to the stress of his continued interactions with Shane, one half of the newlywed couple, Shane and Rachel. Shane keeps on approaching and threatening Armand about the room with the plunge pool. That would be the pineapple room. And who doesn't want a plunge pool? But Shane's a dick about it. Rachel reveals that she writes her articles by cribbing them from the New York Post and is questioning her relationship with Shane. Huh. I wonder why.
Because he's a dick.
Amen. Belinda, who does body work and manages the spa at the resort, is continuing to have awkward interactions with Tanya. But over dinner, Tanya proposes helping Belinda branch out on her own. But it really seems more like Tanya is trying to buy Belinda. And Tanya, beyond her obsession with Belinda, is simply there to spread her mom's ashes at sea and try to connect with people. Like the Diva twins, who she scared away when they were tripping balls on the beach. And really didn't feel like having a conversation with the very lonely Tanya. And with that, Tamara, can you please fill us in on what the ever-loving fuck is going on at the White Lotus Resort today? Because I don't know about our general listeners, but I want to know.
Oh my gosh. This episode has everything. No, I'm just kidding. But it's a doozy. Good Lord, I watched this with my mouth open half the time. I forgot how fucking bananas this was. The Mysterious Monkeys. And we begin. Wiki wakey. It's another tropical morning at the White Lotus. In one room, Olivia awakens to find herself alone. She calls out to Paula, but her friend is not there. Neither's her brother, who seemed to have a relaxing siesta on the beach below. Olivia hears a hotel door open and pretends to be asleep. Paula sneaks back into the room and lays next to her friend, trying super hard to pretend like she just woke up too. But Olivia, undeterred, asks, "Where were you?" And Paula finally, quote-unquote, admits that she was just walking around because she couldn't sleep. Mm-hmm. Walking around a penis. Just then, Quinn wakes up, realizes the lounge chair he was peacefully sleeping on is now surrounded by water.
Oops.
He jumps up in a panic and splashes around in the ocean because his phone, tablet, and Nintendo Switch have all been washed away.
Fuck.
In another part of the building, Miss McQuad, Jennifer Coolidge, is in bed examining the box that's filled with her mother's ashes. And across the hotel, Mark Mossbacher is awake, staring at the ceiling, a look of shock still on his face from the news he heard the prior night. His uncle's words still echoing in his head. Your dad died of AIDS from having sex with homosexuals. He had a double life. And in the Suttons room, they are having more newlywed sex. Well, Shane is, but Rachel's laying there looking rather unfulfilled.
I mean, like, this is supposed to be a passionate time in your relationship. And I think that she was probably kind of sleeping and he just like rolled over on top of her and started going at it. She was wearing a full-on t-shirt while they were having sex.
And it wasn't like sex. He was just ramming into her.
Yes.
Yeah. It did not look sexy at all. Just like, oh, sweet Jesus. This is the, can we please make it stop sex?
Just because you say it's good, Shane, doesn't mean it's good. He's like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And she's laying there like, oh, yeah? Is the Kool-Aid man going to come through the wall? Like, what the fuck?
I think the world would be so much of a better place if men and women could switch roles during sex at least once.
I saw like a TikTok or something where somebody said, you know, women, your body count only counts the partners who have given you orgasms.
Oh.
Yes.
Then I've had sex with three people.
Yeah. It's like, oh, well, then that just sloughs off a whole chunk of people there now, doesn't it?
Oh, my God. That should totally be like the norm and the standard then for all those guys that are like, I only want a woman who is untouched by another man. How about we just cut out all the guys that she didn't orgasm with? And then, you know, this basically like she's pure. Kind of, sort of, in a weird way.
Yeah, the men who are like, I've slept with 100 chicks and I want a woman who has only slept with 5 or less, or, you know, or is like a virgin. I'm all, fuck off.
Like a virgin, hey.
Haven't orgasmed with the guy.
Dun, 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 dun. It's so sad, too. It takes so long to really know your body and what you like.
Yeah.
And it's almost like how you said you have to practice to advocate for yourself in the doctor's office. You almost have to do the same thing in the bedroom.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is your partner being receptive to that.
Yes.
So across the property, in a very unopulent section of the resort, there's fucking chickens milling about, for goodness sake. But this is Hawaii, so there's chickens milling about everywhere.
I don't know. I haven't been to Hawaii. I just thought that was strange. I was like, oh, chickens.
Yeah.
Make a note.
Belinda is arriving for her day at work. Her phone rings as she pulls into a parking spot and she answers it cheerily. Hey, I love it when you call me. I was just thinking about you. It's her son, who's just checking in with her between classes. And Belinda tells her about Tanya and Tanya's previous night's offer to finance a spa that will be run by Belinda so she can help more spoiled rich folks. Belinda's son is thrilled with the news. He knows how hard his mom works and thinks she deserves a break. He encourages her. Mom, you have to do it. That place exploits you. Work it. She chuckles as she hangs up, but her cheer is short-lived as she passes a sedan and sees Armand, eyes closed, motionless with his mouth hanging open. She calls his name a few times, but he doesn't move until she pounds on the window, which finally rouses him. He tumbles out of the car exclaiming that he got there early and decided to take a catnap. To which Belinda shakes her head and accuses, you know, I thought you were dead in there. But you and I, gentle listeners, know that he just fell off the wagon and his car nap was a result of the first bender he's had in years. Oh, that whole thing is so, it just makes me feel really sad inside.
Yeah, that is. It's because you see like the spiral as it happens from the inception to it just like gathering momentum. And like, honestly, the first episode when we saw him falling off the wagon, he like popped one of Paula's pills.
Yeah.
And then he cut to him like dead asleep in his car. And I was like, what the fuck pill was that? Or did they just cut out the 17 other pill concoctions that he took?
I'm guessing he like took an Ambien or something like that, you know.
Of all of the drugs in there, he took an Ambien. Huh. Okay. Wouldn't be my first drug of choice, but then again, I'm not an addict, so I don't know. Back in the Mossbacher's room, Mom Nicole is frantically moving furniture around to get the ideal background and lighting for her Tokyo Zoom call when Quinn arrives in a huff.
In a huff!
Mom cries, Quinn, where have you been? And Quinn yells back, on the beach! Because of them! He thrusts his comforter in the direction of Olivia and Paula, who are trying hard to stifle laughs as he continues. And now my shit's ruined! My phone! My Nintendo! My iPad is soaked! He storms into his kitchen room closet as Nicole glares at the surly teens. Olivia feigns innocence and says, I didn't tell him to go sleep on the beach. Mm. And Paula concurs, it was his idea, Nicole.
Ew.
A distant cry from behind closed doors cries, they're lying! As Olivia switches their focus to Dad, who's been sitting there seemingly comatose the whole time.
He and Armand have something in common. They're both just sitting... motionless, out of it.
Exactly. Olivia asks, what's wrong with Dad? And Nicole matter-of-factly explains, well, your father got some upsetting news last night. He found out that your grandfather died of AIDS. Well, way to just rip off the Band-Aid, Nicole. The girls are stunned, and Paula asks quietly, how did he get AIDS? Nicole responds, well, probably from having sex with men. The last bit is said just as Quinn reemerges and asks, who had sex with men? Nicole reiterates that grandfather was a homosexual who died from AIDS, but Olivia shockingly can't relate and doesn't know why her father is so shaken by the news. She helpfully, not helpfully, says, oh, he was probably a bottom. That's how they usually get it. But that doesn't mean he was a femme or gay, Dad. He could have been a butch bottom or was straight and too embarrassed to ask grandmother to use a dildo for some ass play.
This is like another one of those Shane moments where I know she's not Shane, but, you know, she might as well be in this case, mm-hmm. where I'm like, fucking Mark. I understand him being shooketh. I understand him having to process it. But the amount that he has just like nosedived from this news is banana saw. I'm like, come on.
I can relate with Mark. I think if you have this vision of your parents that's definitely set one way and somebody told you no, it was actually another way, and it like you reanalyzed your whole entire childhood. Like, it is a little shocking.
I understand it being shocking 100%. But like, if I found out that my dad had secretly been having gay affairs this entire time,
mm-hmm.
I would have feelings of like betrayal and confusion and like, were things a lie? But I wouldn't not be able to function in my life. And he's like off the fucking deep end, just being like, I'm just going to stare off into nothingness and be a complete shell of a human being. I wouldn't be a shell of a human being.
But that's where you and Mark differ, because he's a delicate little flower, Corinne.
It's not like he found out that his dad was a serial killer or something like that.
Well, at the same time, when he has that soft place to land called Nicole, I can kind of see how he's like, I'm just going to put myself in a hard shell and just process this for a few hours before I come to terms with it.
I don't know.
Because Nicole doesn't really seem like she's very touchy-feely or even like any type of consoler or good partner that's kind of helping him work through this stuff.
I mean, she's letting him do his thing. She's letting him be like a comatose, like, ass.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more than a few hours. He's
but
like...
Nicole lets everybody in her family pretty much do whatever the fuck they want. Exhibit A, Olivia.
Uh-huh. Nicole is living in her own universe. It is true. And right now, Mark has a galaxy of his own.
Well put. But after Olivia says all those helpful things, Mark covers his ears and asks them to please stop explaining because he feels like throwing up. To which Olivia chastises him, Dad, you can't say that. But Mom argues, he can say that. He's having a negative, visceral reaction to his dad having sex with men, and that's okay because this is a safe space and he's here with family.
See, he said just like what you're saying right there. You're like Nicole. It's perfect.
Olivia retorts, up to a point. To which Mom responds, or what? You'll cancel him, dox him, sick the K-pop fans on him. Quinn, who's been quietly listening to all this back and forth, finally voices his concerns around the matter, which are, Mom, I need a new phone. And that's that.
Mm-hmm. A little while later, we see the Suttons, Rachel and Shane, having breakfast on the outdoor patio. They are not having outdoor breakfast in their room by their plunge pool because, you know, they don't have a plunge pool. Just FYI, in case you were wondering.
Way to rub it in. One more time, Corinne. One more time.
Things seem a little tense as Rachel eyes her husband who's drinking in the view before she says, Well, you were pretty horned up this morning. Shane smiles and says, Well, I'm waking up next to you. What do you expect? Weren't you horny? Rachel shrugs. She's like, I was until you just flipped on top of me and just started pounding into me like a jackhammer.
Indeed.
And you started fixating on the plunge pool, much like Corinne. What the hell? Rachel shrugs, explaining, I mean, yeah, but not every second of the day, like you. Is that what this marriage is based on for you? Just sex? Shane scoffs.
If you plunged into me as much as you plunged into this idea of a plunge pool, then our marriage would be perfect.
Yeah, if you put the amount of effort into me that you put into trying to get us the room with the plunge pool, like, things would be a lot different on our honeymoon. Absolutely.
And their sex life would be so fulfilling.
Uh-huh. Yay! Tamara, marriage counselor to the stars. Mm-hmm. Shade scoffs. No, I mean, I love you and we make a great team together. You act like I'm some sexed up pig, but I'm actually pretty emo. So don't box me in. Emo? Emo.
I know.
More like aggro. What the hell?
I was like, let me rewind that, make sure that's what I heard.
Yeah.
No, he said emo.
I literally rewound it too. I was like, he didn't just say emo. Yep, he sure did.
Do you know what emo means?
Yeah.
Do you know what that means, Shane? I don't think you know what that means.
Yeah, seriously. He's like, I mean, he is kind of a moody bitch, but like emo is just more like introspectively moody than like mm-hmm. outwardly aggressively moody like he is. Rachel begins softening at his words until the hotel attendant Dylan passes by and Shane stops him and requests, Hey, if you see Armand, can you tell him I'd like to have a few words with him?
I thought that was done in the first episode and the second episode, but nope, here it is again in the third episode.
In the third. Yeah, you know. Shane knows how to get things done, Tam. Isn't that hot?
Slowly and surely then, because he still doesn't have that plunge bowl.
Rachel's face sours and he assures her, It's not about the room, but she doesn't believe him. And neither do we, Rachel. Neither do we. The only thing that I would think at this stage he might be trying to do is arranging for a special meal or something with her. But like, nah, he wouldn't do something like that. That just, he's such an asshole.
That doesn't say Shane.
That does not say Shane. No, no. Meanwhile, at the front desk, Tanya finds Armand, who seems more preoccupied with other things like drugs. When she explains, I have my mother's ashes and I want to spread them, but I just realized I'm going to need a boat. Armand's face finally registers what she's saying and he offers helpfully. Well, we have a boat you can charter. It's free today if you want to take it out. Perhaps at sunset? Tanya is on board, literally and figuratively, with this idea, but adds, Can I get some alcohol on the boat? I think I might need a drink. Armand asks, Some fruit and cheese too, maybe? He's like actually doing customer service in this moment, which is
mm-hmm.
impressive.
That sounds awesome. Yes.
Yes.
Alcohol on a boat at sunset with a fruit and cheese platter. Sign me up.
Yeah. Tamara's like, charcuterie, boat, champagne. Mm. Yes. Mm. Thank you. Mm. Tanya contemplates this and says, Could you just tell the captain that I'm probably going to be real emotional and I just want him to be prepared? I might be a complete basket case. Armand nods, agreeing, and concludes, Great. We'll see you at the dock at 5 p.m. Before she leaves, Tanya has a final thought. And yes, let's do the cheese.
Good on you, Tanya.
Armand waits till she's gone, then asks an attendant to watch the desk. I mean, Tanya's like a woman after your own heart in that regard. Not in mm-hmm. the stalking of Belinda regard.
Armand waits till she's gone and then asks an attendant to watch the desk so he can grab something from his office drugs. He rushes to it, and his desk drawer pulls out the teen's bag of tricks and drugs and pops one of the pills from a prescription bottle. What pill? He doesn't really know. It's drugs, and that's all that really matters. He chases it down with water when Dylan enters and informs him, Mr. Sutton would like to have a word with you. Dylan is a 20-something young man who's got, like, kind of cute, tously, browned...
beachy hair.
Yeah, he has the top part of it pulled back because trying to be business appropriate or whatever. Yeah. So, anyways, he seems like a generally nice guy. But Armand has had enough. He explodes. He thinks I ruined his honeymoon. Well, fuck him. I will ruin his honeymoon. I will ruin his honeymoon. En fossies. Dylan stands like a deer caught in headlights until Armand's demeanor completely changes and he motions towards his employee's head, smiling strangely. I like your hair. Your man bun looks cute. Dylan smiles slightly, thanks him, then hightails it off the fuck out of his office. He's getting vibes. Weird vibes, and I do not blame him.
Yes, very, very inappropriate. A little later, the Mossbacher family are also having breakfast on the outdoor patio. Quinn is demanding a new phone be sent to the resort, or he's going to need his mom's computer. Nicole squashes that idea because she has work, which causes her son to protest angrily. What am I supposed to do in the meantime? Mom motions to the beauty around them. Enjoy Hawaii? Swim in the ocean? Quinn seems about to protest until he remembers, oh yeah, I did see a whale last night in the water. It was pretty cool. Mom proclaims, you are not sleeping out there again, while looking directly at her daughter, which causes Olivia to say, what's the big deal? He was communing with nature.
Ugh.
This sets Mom off on a diatribe about her daughter has so much sympathy for the disenfranchised, who she's never met before, and none for her family who love her. Olivia rolls her eyes while their dad takes a big swig from his large Bloody Mary, causing Quinn to remark, Dad, that's your second Bloody Mary and we're supposed to scuba today. But Mark's not hungry and too busy trying to wash away the new realization about his gay father with alcohol. Just then, the surly teens see Armand and hustle over to inquire about their missing bag again. He greets them warmly and updates them with the unfortunate news. No girls? I'm sorry, no one has found your bag yet, but we'll still keep an eye out for it. The girls head back to their family disappointed, and Armand happily flits over to another guest, since his, their drug stash is still safely tucked away in his desk. His good mood is short-lived when he is approached by Shane, who surprisingly doesn't ask about the pineapple suite again. Instead, he explains that he wants to do something really romantic for his wife. He asks, can we have, like, a candlelit dinner somewhere off on our own, like a private beach or a cliffside? Armand's brain hamster starts running full throttle, and he offers, since you're such a valued guest, and because the whole pineapple suite mix-up, why don't we set up something really unique, like a candlelit dinner on our charter boat at sunset? Shane is excited about this idea, and Armand really sells it.
I see where this is going. I'm like, I see you, Armand. I see you.
Oh, my. This is, whoo.
And Shane's just trying to get Rachel's panties wet is really the whole thing.
Shane is fully committed before Armand shares one teeny tiny detail. He informs his nemesis guest, but there will be another woman on the boat, but she's solo and she'll be as quiet as a church mouse. Shane hesitates because he wants a really romantic vibe, so Armand throws on, well, it's a substantial boat. You won't even notice her there. She's paid for it, so all you have to cover is the cost for dinner. The newlywed husband finally agrees and walks away while Armand smiles like the cat who swallowed the canary. Mm. And that really, to me, sounds like a shitty offer.
Yes.
You're a castaway on a boat somebody else chartered as compensation for Armand's fuck-up. And bonus, you get to pay for your own dinner, too? Like,
yeah.
He's getting shit, basically.
No.
He's getting less than shit. He's getting a shitty experience, but we will get into it.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. It's really the most exciting thing that happens this episode. Oh. On the other end of the resort, Tanya wanders into the spa where she finds Belinda manning the counter. The manager brightens when she sees the guest enter and says, "Thank you so much for dinner last night. I really appreciate it." Tanya doesn't return her smile and instead says solemnly, "I'm scattering my mother's ashes tonight at 5 p.m. on a boat, and I really want you to be there." Belinda shakes her head sadly, informing her, "I get off at 7 p.m., so..." Tanya's disappointed face spurns Belinda to add, "You know what? Yes, I'll be there because I know this is important to you. I can get someone to cover for me." Tanya thanks her profusely before adding, "Just to let you know, I'm probably going to get real drunk. Don't judge me." Belinda agrees not to, and they plan on meeting at the dock at 5 p.m. And I don't blame her, though, for, like, going on that, because even if it was somebody that I just, like, met, you know, and we had, like, a little talk or whatever, and then they're like, "I'm going to be doing this, like, really hard thing. Can you be there for me?" I'd be like, if I could make it happen, I would.
That's why I was like, oh, this is so like me and you, Corinne, when you were there for me when I scattered my mom's ashes, except I wasn't schnockered.
No, you weren't schnockered, but I was definitely thinking about it during Tanya's speech later. And I was like, it's just like when we scattered your mom's ashes, except not at all.
That's why last episode, I'm like, oh, there's a super huge moment in here where I was like, this is like me and Corinne. And that was it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My sister was there, too, though.
Yeah. Sister Schmister. A little later in the swimming pool, the Mossbacher guys are getting their scuba certification, and Mark is having an existential crisis. He relays to his son, "I don't know what real is." He pauses and asks, "Are you gay? Because it's okay if you are. Just be real." Quinn shakes his head, and his dad continues unraveling. "What's real is gay, straight, whatever. We're just fucking monkeys, just animals who want to be superheroes and respectable fathers and pillars of our community or whatever. But in fact, we're just monkeys living in our own pods, driven by basic instincts, based on these hierarchies to hump each other. I knew the part of my father he wanted me to see. He hit the monkey, and that screwed me up." Quinn looks at his dad doubtfully and asks, You think that's what did it?" Mark nods emphatically and cries, "Definitely. My whole life I thought I was the flawed child of an icon. Meanwhile, he's in some bathhouses on the DL getting manhandled by some random dudes. Oh, I wish I would have known." Quinn mutters a quiet, "I'm sorry." Mark sighs, saying, "I mean, I get it. You don't want your kid thinking you're some sex-crazed lunatic." After staring at the water for a few dazed seconds, Mark asks his son, "Do you want to know me?" And just gentle listeners for reference, his dad probably was in his 20s in the 60s or the 70s. So it was a very different time being gay then than it is now. So there were a lot of men who were married but having extracurricular activities on the side with men because they were actually gay and just didn't feel like they could live in their truth. So I would be more agog about that happening like today, even though it still does, but like today, then I would be like from somebody who was, you know, doing that stuff in the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and 90s. 90s was when things started to like slowly shift, but still, you know, it was just different time. Anywho.
Yeah.
After staring at the water for a few dazed seconds, Mark asks his son, "Do you want to know me?" Quinn almost inaudibly responds, maybe? I don't know." And his dad decides, "Maybe I just need to be really real with you." And I'm like, no, I don't think you need to be really real with him.
No, don't do it. That's a bad idea. Bad.
I don't think Quinn wants you to be really real with him.
I know. He's like, I don't fucking know what to say here, Dad. I just, Jesus Christ. We're stuck in a pool. There's nowhere to run.
And you've had too many fucking Bloody Marys this morning. Yes. Mark continues, "That's the new legacy, being really real with you." Quinn looks at his father nervously for a second, but the instructor interrupts, asking if they're ready. And father and son begin their scuba dive training, sitting underwater, blowing bubbles, clearing their masks, communicating with sign language, and learning to live in a new and unnatural environment. And I don't blame Quinn for being nervous. His dad is being unpredictable and had a breakfast of Bloody Marys. And they didn't look like the hearty kind of meal-worthy Bloody Marys, because sometimes there's just like all kinds of shit stuffed in there, but it mainly looked like vodka and tomatoes. Is it with vodka? Vodka and tomato juice?
Yeah.
And I'm also wondering how many people would be able to qualify for their scuba license at that resort if they were breathalyzed before their training. Asking for a friend.
And it seems like they're learning to live in a new and a natural environment in more ways than one. Not only underwater, but in this newfound legacy that Mark's proposing to his poor, poor son.
Oh, man, Quinn, he's just getting fucked from all sides, except for, like, the fun kind. Yeah.
I predict he's going to be the type that goes off to college and never comes back. Probably comes home like once every 2.5-3 years. And his mom's going to be like, why don't you ever visit? We love you, Quinn. Because you let my sister shove me into a closet for our whole vacation, basically. In another pool on the resort grounds, the Suttons are sitting on lounge chairs. Rachel's happily chatting on the phone with her parents about how nice the resort is when Shane inexplicably dives into the water and swims over to the diva twins, Olivia and Paula.
Oh my God.
Who are, per usual, reading hefty books. He asks, hey, the other day you two were reading Freud and Nietzsche. What are you reading today? The surly teens hold up their books and Shane reads the covers and asks, The Sexual Persona and the Wretched of Earth? Do you guys really read that stuff? Olivia deadpans, no, they're props. And Paula adds, we have a stylist pick out our outfits and then we have a book stylist that picks out our books.
Okay, that has got those two lines from the Diva Twins have actually got to be one of my favorite lines from this entire show so far. Mm. I do not stand the Diva Twins, but I will stand those really clever, sarcastic lines that they threw out there.
But are they really reading those books? Because they just had Nietzsche and Freud the day before, and now they have The Sexual Persona and the Wretched of the Earth. That's some heavy reading. That is not a light beach read. Not at all.
Yeah. I questioned that, too. When Paula said what she did, I was like, but are they serious? There was part of me that was wondering.
Yeah. Exactly. There's like comic books tucked under the covers. Seriously. That we just can't see.
Harlequin romances.
Yes. Shane chuckles, and across the pool, Rachel gets a nervous look on her face. She half listens to her mom as she strains to maintain her composure, as Shane overtly flirts with these two girls.
Oh my God.
They begin icing him out like they did with Rachel, but he turns on the charm and playfully demands they get in the pool. Get in the pool already. What are you doing out here? They decline, so he starts splashing them, which causes the girls to giggle and duck behind their books. Rachel has had enough, gathers her things, and leaves in a huff.
In a huff.
But no one notices. Not the surly teens or Shane, who's trying to convince the two teens that he's peed in the water that he's splashing on them.
Oh, you're so funny, Shane. And I don't know if it's a coping mechanism and they're laughing because they're uncomfortable or if they're actually flirting back and enjoying the situation.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's a little column A and a little column B.
Exactly.
Because they're like, stop! No, stop! Yeah. You know?
I was like, a second ago you hated him. Now you look like you actually will get in the pool with them. So. Mm-hmm.
After the scuba session, the Mossbacher boys go to the poolside bar for lunch, where they encounter Rachel, who fled from the flirting that she was witnessing from her husband. Nothing more attractive than that.
Like,
if my newlywed husband was flirting with teenage girls, I would be like, fuck right off with that. No.
I don't think there's enough red flags in this whole resort to adequately fucking wave down on that bullshit.
She's just like walking around and there's like a person who's got their two red flags and they're like doing fancy little waves around with them and like flipping them up in the air. And she's like, huh. She keeps on walking and the person jumps in front of her again and is like, look, figure eight ribbons of red flags. And she's like, ah. And she just kind of keeps on walking.
I'm envisioning a whole White Lotus flag girl squad a la like our high school days with the big honking huge flags that they spin around.
Yeah, exactly.
With music behind.
It's exactly.
Like, look over here. Dee, 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 red flag. Red flag. Red flag.
Red motherfucking flag, Rachel, come on. Oh my gosh. Once Quinn leaves for the restroom, Mark calls over to Rachel. As he's drinking another alcoholic beverage, so he's just, you know, he's holding back, you know. Mm-hmm. You enjoying your time? Rachel smiles politely and calls back, yes, very much. They make small talk about honeymoons, and Rachel asks Mark, where was your honeymoon? Mark informs her, believe it or not, we went to China. My wife, Nicole, she took Mandarin in college and wanted to show off. They both chuckle politely, and Mark adds, things were a lot different then. Rachel tries to maintain the levity and asks, so how long have you been married? Mark answers, 22 years. And when Rachel asks, what's your secret? How'd you keep the spark alive? He chuckles bitterly and says, oh, the spark is not alive. It died. I mean, there's still love, but no spark.
Back in the Mossbacher room, the surly teens Olivia and Paula are snickering about Shane's earlier antics, but stop abruptly when they see their mom frantically trying to move the furniture again. Nicole Mossbacher has finally found a background that she feels will suit her Zoom call and is trying to move the hideaway bed so it doesn't show. Olivia, obviously familiar with these antics, cries, Mom, there's medication for this. To which Nicole pleads, just help me. I don't want my entire organization and my Chinese affiliates to know I'm on fucking vacation. The girls relent, and after much pushing on all parts, they get the hide-a-bed a-hidden. The girls collapse, and Nicole happily saunters over to the computer to make her call. Olivia remarks, Mom, you look deranged. To which Nicole casually responds, that's okay, I have a filter for that. Until she catches a glimpse of herself in her computer screen and realizes she does look manic and begins applying lip gloss and fluffing her hair. She sees Olivia shuffling over to Paula, who dramatically collapsed after struggling with the hide-a-bed, and barks, Olivia, get down! And her teen daughter drops to the floor next to her friend and pats Paula's arm while her mom answers her Zoom call and cordially greets her affiliates in Chinese. Ni hao!
Oh, good times. She looks down at Paula. Are you okay? No. All right, I'm going to do my Zoom call now. Good times. Meanwhile, back at the pool, Mark is regaling Rachel with his and Nicole's origin story. He says, I pursued Nicole for 3 years, and she wouldn't let me touch her. And when I finally could, I couldn't get enough of her. I had to have it all the time. She thought I had priapism, which is like when you get this perpetual erection that will not go down. And apparently that can give you impotence. I looked it up. Rachel begins looking uncomfortable, shockingly. Huh? And even more so when Quinn rejoins his father and stares at her silently while Mark continues oversharing. And it doesn't matter how much you role play or porn you watch together. Sex is like one of those food challenges on the reality shows where you gotta eat like a live bowl of worms and you know you gotta do it, but you don't want to. So you psych yourself out and hold your nose so you don't gag. Really? Really, dude? Really? Jesus. Rachel shifts in her chair, obviously uncomfortable with the conversation. So Mark adds casually, but it's natural. It'd be weird if the spark didn't fade. And I'm just trying to be real with you. Mm. You've just drank too much. That's your problem, Mark. He introduces Quinn as his son. And Quinn finally asks, what are you guys talking about? And Mark says dismissively, oh, about having sex with your mother? Questions that Quinn wished he hadn't asked right there. Rachel has had enough and grabs her bag and starts fanning her face. Oh, it's so hot. It's so hot. You know, I think I'm going to have lunch in my room because it's so hot down here. She flashes the two a charming smile before hustling the fuck off, which causes Mark to smirk at his son, take a sip of beer and ask, was it something I said?
Yes. Yes, it was.
What? And Quinn looks beleaguered and is probably counting his dad's drinks.
And being like, I don't want to be real anymore. I don't want to be real anymore. Yes. I don't want to be real with you anymore. This is what it comes down to. No, thank you.
Seriously.
Rachel does go back to her room and sits on the patio reading a book when Shane finds her. He stands over her and accuses playfully, "You left me." Rachel answers sourly, "I didn't think you noticed since you were flirting with those girls." Mm. He cocks his head to the side and smirks. "I wasn't flirting. I was giving them shit." Mm-hmm. But she doesn't buy it and accuses, "Well, it looked like you were having a good time."
Looks out over the water. There's a big difference between, say, like, everybody's at a table and you're having, like, a playful conversation with somebody mm-hmm. versus actually swimming up to the two teenage girls in the pool and like forcing engagement with them.
Oh no, they were across from them in the pool. They were on the other side of the pool. So it took some work to get over to them.
Yeah. It was very intentional. Yeah.
Uh-huh. They weren't on the lounge chairs next to them. No, no.
No. If they had been on the lounge chairs next to him, I would have given like a little leeway. But that's not what's happening here.
Yeah. Shane tells her, "Well, I came to tell you to wear something cute tonight because I have a surprise for you. Something romantic."
Ooh.
Rachel's face softens and she asks, "What is it?"
"A funeral."
Shane smiles at her back and refuses to say except that, that it's going to be very, very romantic. Then leaves. But not before taking her book and softly bopping her on the back of the head. Ah, this just gets me because Shane does so many shitty things and Rachel like questions him and then he like disarms her with his quote unquote charm. And then she's like, "Okay, let's just not talk about the girls anymore because you're taking me out someplace romantic tonight." And that makes it okay.
Also, if I'm reading a book and somebody like rips it out of my hands and like playfully bops me on the head with it, fuck right off. Give me my book back. Mm-hmm.
Be like, "Oh, bitch, it's on."
Yeah.
Did you see? Mm-mm. Out. Mm.
"Do not mess with my book." Red flag, red flag, red flag, red flag.
"I got Nietzsche in one hand and Freud in the other, and I'm not afraid to use them." It's a book war. It's a book war at that point if somebody does that to me. Meanwhile, in Tanya's room, she's already partaking of some champagne and getting emotional as she preps for the evening's events. We next see her walking wobbly on the deck of the charter boat, with Belinda following close behind. They see a transport boat fast approaching, and Tanya asks, "Who are these people?" It's Shane and Rachel. They board Tanya's boat, and Rachel is already impressed, asking, "Is this all for us?" Shane noncommittally says, "Well, yeah, most of it." Then they stand at the helm and look out at the beautiful sunset in each other's arms when what? Find out with us after this break. I just have to say this one part in this like scene when they're on the boat and they get on the boat with Tanya, Shane, and Rachel. Mm-hmm. It was so distracting because they were supposed to be there during a beautiful sunset. Yeah. And some points they were during a beautiful sunset. And then in the next scene, Shane and Tanya are speaking to each other and it's fucking in the middle of the goddamn day. And I'm like, it's supposed to be a sunset. And I know it doesn't get super dark there, but Jesus Christ. Can you get like at least past noon in the afternoon? So if you haven't watched that, gentle listeners, just pay attention to that because it distracted the hell out of me.
I didn't pay attention to it at all. It didn't bother me at all. So there you go. I was oblivious.
And that's because I'm right and Corinne's wrong. I'm just kidding. We just notice different things and different things bother
us. We totally notice different things, which is one of the reasons mm-hmm. why it's great because we surprise each other all the time with our commentary. What? That happened? Really?
Yes. Yes, it did. Well, we're back. We've been back because we've been talking about it. Ha ha. Belinda clink, 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 clinks her champagne glass with her ring, announcing that Tanya's going to make a speech. Tanya's all in black and has a dramatic black veil trailing behind her in the wind and says, "Thank you so much for coming. This is my mother." She holds up the box. "And she wouldn't want her ash spreading to be a sad thing, so let's have fun." As she's speaking, Rachel's smile fades and Shane begins to stiffen. He gets a what the fuck look on his face and frantically looks around for the transport boat, but it has already left and they are stuck. And the boat is not that large, but it is large enough to accommodate two dining tables, which are ultimately set up for dinner. Rachel and Shane are at one, and Belinda and Tanya are on another at a slightly higher level.
Just think of it as like two card tables.
Pretty much.
With tablecloths on them. Yeah.
Yes. A la Love Island.
Seriously. Yes.
Dylan, the hotel attendant, brings the newlywed couple flutes of champagne and Shane hisses at him. What the hell is going on here? She doesn't think we're here for her, does she? Because we're not. Rachel tries calming him down while assuring Dylan that everything's fine. We're going to be okay here. Dylan hustles away just as Tanya calls over, Woohoo!
Why don't you all come sit up here? It's more convivial.
Oh, fuck off.
The couple decline and try unsuccessfully to enjoy their meal while Tanya stares at them and marvels.
It'd be so nice to be in love. I wish I had a man here.
She looks at Belinda.
I mean, I'm glad you're here, but you know what I mean.
Belinda nods sadly as Tanya calls out,
Y'all are such a beautiful couple.
Oh, yeah. Person who wants me to move over to their table so I can socialize with them? No. No, thank you. Yeah.
See, but that's Tanya. Remember, she wants everybody to know everything about her and be all up in her business.
She's very much like Shane. She wants everybody to be sucked into the orbit. Yes.
Mm-hmm. His love life would probably be a lot better if he would suck into Rachel's orbit.
Yes. Back on land, Mark has relinquished his phone to his son, who immediately scuttles away with it to get online. Does he have a secret online girlfriend? I'm asking because I'm curious. That's even funnier because it's more innuendo-y. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That'll get put into the right place. Fear not.
Thank you. Bless your heart.
Yes.
Sometimes it comes to me late.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, man, I should have said that. I'm telling you to say, because Corinne can edit and yeah. She can make magic happen.
Yeah. It's close enough where it's not going to be a problem for me to put it in.
I know. Not like that. You know that thing I said 2 hours ago? Can you put this underneath it? Thanks.
Sure. Back online, Mike has relinquished his phone to his son, who immediately scuttles away with it to get online. Once alone, Mark begins shamelessly flirting with two attractive girls at the bar by talking about leprosy, because nothing gets a woman hot and bothered like some good leprosy talk. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Not surprisingly, the girls take the first opportunity to get far, far, far away from him, leaving a seat open for Armand, who rushes over and asks the bartender for a whiskey. Neat. Once it's poured, Armand slams it back while Mark looks on surprised. He asks, drinking on the job? Armand barely looks at him and instead motions for another drink before muttering, I'm off and it's been a long day. Mark holds up his beer and says, yeah, me too. Long day of fucking drinking. That's all it's been for you, dude. Come on. Armand asks about Mark's family and Mark gasps, shit, I forgot all about them. I better get back. Who am I kidding? They've had enough of me. Oh, Lord. Oh, Mark. Nah, do not want to be inside your head. No. Back on the boat, Shane is looking for credit on his romantic gesture. Huh? I was thinking about you, babe. I was thinking about you. Rachel thanks him for the lovely dinner and asks, is this because of our conversation this morning? I was just looking for assurance because I'm afraid our whole marriage is based on your sexual attraction to me. And what happens when that fades? He shakes his head at her and says, Bubba, it never will. And a thought bubble appears over his head, bloop, 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 that says, because I have my mother's favorite plastic surgeons on standby. She smiles at him and they hold hands across the table before they hear, it's time, you guys are going to have to move. They look up to see Tanya with her mother's ashes in her hand. Well, the box. And then their table gets picked up unceremoniously by Dylan and Belinda. The couple stands there awkwardly as Tanya downs another glass of champagne and then says a few words in the ultimate overshare of a eulogy. My poor mother. She died in June. loved the ocean, and tried real hard to be a good mother, even though she didn't have any maternal instincts or skills. She was always looking for male affection and was a nymphomaniac. I'd walk into the room and there'd be all sorts of men in her bed. She had borderline personality disorder. She manipulated people with her money. She was cruel. Tanya begins to cry. She was so, so cruel. Oh, Mother, you said I'd never be a ballerina. That was when I was skinny. My mom was always trying to keep me down, and yet I still love her. Everyone's faces fall when Tanya says, I'm going to need your help. Worst case scenarios flash through everybody's head until she adds, I can't get the lid off this urn. Shane briskly takes it, pries it off, and hands it back to Tanya. But I got to say, like, in this situation, Shane actually does a good thing because he says, would you like me to open it for you? And she says, yes. And he takes it and he opens it. So he actually does something selfless-ish. Yeah. I mean, I know he wants to get things moving, but still, right. Like, he offers her help.
He just wants the discomfort to stop.
Yeah. He's like, let's get this show on the road.
You know what else is good in addition to Shane's good deed, Corinne?
Oh, what?
Your Tanya McQuad impression. Leaps and bounds better than last episode.
I've been working on it, and I was very glad because you gave me a lot of Tanya, so I was like, I was practicing while I was watching.
I always write it out, and then I try to just, like, nicely partition it so we have equal amounts, but when I saw how much Tanya McQuad you got, I was a little sad, and I was like, damn.
A.K.A. Jennifer Coolidge.
Yes, you do an excellent Jennifer Coolidge. So, yeah, I was just, I was trying to live up to your excellent Jennifer Coolidge impression. Just saying.
And you did. And you did.
So, Tanya turns to the ocean while releasing handfuls of her mother's ashes. Goodbye, mother. Goodbye, mother. Fling, fling. All of this makes everyone uncomfortable, but it's only momentary because she finally clutches the remaining ashes to her chest saying, I can't do it. I'm not ready. I can't do it. We cut to them sailing back to the resort. Tanya has her head on Belinda's shoulder while Belinda sings Sanskrit chants, which are beautiful. I just had no way of reliably recreating them, so I'm not trying. Because I don't want to offend anybody who does the whole chanting thing or whatever. I don't know. Shane looks like he's ready to kill somebody because his really intimate romantic date for two turned into an ash spreading ceremony. Yay.
That was so awkwardly awesome.
Yeah. I was like, you know, I really just don't feel bad about this at all. Actually, it's kind of amazing.
Armand, you evil genius, you.
And you know what? Tanya appreciated having them there, and Rachel can roll with the punches on it. So Shane was really the only person who was very much put out by it.
Mm-hmm. Back on land, Mark and Armand are still chatting as the nighttime torches get lit. They are both now obviously schnockered, and Mark finally asks, you're gay, right?
Oh, God.
Armand confirms this, and he continues, my dad was gay. I mean, I think he was, because he liked having sex with men. Armand smirks and says, well, it's a telltale sign.
Uh-huh.
Mark chuckles and asks, what's it like to get fucked in the ass? I mean, it must feel kind of good, or else you wouldn't do it, right? Armand looks at him pointedly and says, do you want to find out?
Yes. Go, Armand.
There's a pregnant pause before Mark awkwardly mutters, I'll take a rain check, and then shuffles off. In the distance, the chartered boat has landed, and Shane is convinced that Armand put them on that boat purposefully knowing it was a goddamn funeral, and he is out for blood, while Rachel tries to unsuccessfully calm him down. Armand sees them walking across the patio and quickly turns around. He'll deal with Shane's wrath tomorrow. Meanwhile, Belinda's putting a very drunk Tanya to bed. Tanya unceremoniously dunks her mother's urn on the bedside table while Belinda guides her to lay down and tries leaving, but Tanya balks, "My head!" So Belinda returns and carefully picks up her head and puts it on the pillow and says goodnight. Huh, shocking. It seems like Tanya's using her money to manipulate people just like her mother.
At least she hasn't told Belinda that she can't be a ballet dancer. I'm just saying.
Uh-huh. But she could very well pick up her own damn head and put it on a pillow.
What? That's just a bridge too far, Tam. Come on.
Okay. I know. Looking for miracles over here.
Gentle listeners, I'm just remembering when my sister died and I really needed somebody to put my head on a pillow and Tamara was here, but she wouldn't. It was just really heartbreaking for me.
Almost ruined our friendship. So I'm like, put your own goddamn head on the pillow, Corinne. It's 2 inches to the left.
In the dining area, Tanya Mosbacher and the teens are seated for dinner. She's unsuccessfully trying to text her husband while wondering aloud why he's not answering. Motherfucking Quinn finally mumbles, "I have his phone." So he's been getting these texts from his mom. They're just popping up in front of his video game or whatever. And he's just like, whatevs.
Yes.
Oh my God.
He's like, fuck you, mom. This is about as much attention as you're giving me at this resort. So there you go.
His mom's appalled and asks, "Didn't you see me texting all day? And you didn't think to let me know?" Quinn shrugs. And Tanya turns to her daughter and says, "This is all your fault because you can't share a huge room with your brother." Olivia smirks and says, "It's perfect, Mom. He's got the whole beach to jack off to." Quinn tries to protest, but Olivia accuses, "You're addicted to porn." "He's a teenage boy. What the fuck? You're addicted to porn? Jesus Christ." Tanya reprimands her. "Don't sex shame your brother. I know it's in style to sex shame, but it's not right." Olivia and Paula snicker before Olivia states flatly, "You sex shame Dad." Man, she's just like, fuck. Tanya looks at her incredulously and explains, "When you're young, sex is exciting, but as you get older, it gets demystified. The spark goes out, and then it's like having sex with a bowl of worms or some shit like that."
Yes. Having sex is like a bowl of worms. That you have to psych yourself up for.
Yes. She says, "It gets demystified and other things take priority." And poor Quinn, I have a feeling, and I may be wrong, that like there's going to be some extracurricular sex with Mark or with Nicole. And it's not going to be with each other. It's going to be with other people. Mm. And I'm like, is there like a Shane Nicole thing that's going to happen? Is there like a Mark Armand thing that's going to happen?
You're going to have to find out with our gentle listeners, Corinne.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Anywho, poor Quinn gets another sex talk from his mother's POV because he hasn't gotten enough from his dad.
Yep.
While Olivia mumbles, "That's perverted," a handsome busboy, Kai, comes to clear the plates, and he and Paula share a look and a smile that does not escape Olivia.
When the coast is clear, Armand leaves the bar and goes back to his office to fill up on drugs. He's about to shake a few pills into his hand when there's a knock on the door. It's Dylan, again, to give him a recap on the cruise. Poor Dylan looks shooketh by the evening's events when Armand asks how it went. Dylan says, "Not good, and they're pissed." Armand says, "Great," and closes his eyes in triumph. Dylan tries correcting him, "Not great, it was a shit show." He looks on confused as Armand says, "Perfect." Dylan stands there dumbfounded, and Armand offers him a drink from the tequila decanter sitting beside him. The attendant declines, and Armand shakes his pill bottle and asks, "Perhaps something else? By the way, I like your hair, it really suits you." Dylan looks uncomfortable and mumbles, "Yeah, you said that." Armand smiles mischievously and says, "Turns out you're my type.
Ew.
Blonde Sephora with the man bun." Dylan responds with an, "Okay." And Armand, perhaps finally realizing he's being completely inappropriate, adds, "Dylan, you're a good worker, and I've got my eye on you." His employee responds by hightailing it out of there, and the manager pours himself another drink.
But I'd say by saying, I've got my eye on you, he's like, I've got my eye on you, in a flirtatious tone, is also completely inappropriate.
Right, but he's trying to, like, bring it back down. Like, I'm still being in professional manager mode. I'm not saying, like, I got my eye on you. I'm saying, like, you should be up for a promotion soon.
Mm-hmm, if you suck my dick. Now, you see, Tam, you've been a manager a variety of times.
Yeah.
I just want to know, because I've never been a manager, how... Uh-huh. Many times do you offer your employees hard alcohol or illicit drugs during their shift?
Never. As a matter of fact, there was this one New Year's, we were making Christmas/New Year's cards, and I had all of my staff like holding up flutes of champagne, like cheers to the New Year's. And then I was like, you know, I don't want people thinking we're drinking on the job. So we'll just pick one of the other, like, more innocent, less alcohol-y, even though it wasn't alcohol. I think it was like apple cider.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not going to use those. So even the illusion of alcohol was not allowed in my workplace.
Gosh, you're so square. You're not cool like Armand is.
I know. Well, shoot.
This next section, Tamara lovingly titled, Everyone is Getting Some, or Trying To. The evening ends with everyone trying to get some, and by get some action, get their groove on, have some fucking sex, humpity hump, whatever. Mark hoots and grunts like an ape while trying to mount his wife. I mean, it was a pretty spectacular moment when he throws off his shirt and then he flexes his arms while he goes, ooh, 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 oh.
Maybe that's part of their role play. I don't know.
Were you turned on?
Were you turned on? You're the Steve Zahn fan.
I thought it was amusing, but his lack of vocabulary throughout the whole thing, he just, like, he literally was grunting and making monkey noises from the edge of the bed onto the bed, right up on the next to Nicole, which I'm just like, that's taking role play a little too far. She quickly shuts that shit down, probably realizing he's shit-faced and also super not sexy. But she also shut him down on the first night of the vacation as well, when he was not shit-faced and was not trying to be an ape. So I think that's pretty status quo for their relationship.
Yeah.
In the honeymooner's room, Rachel is still trying to calm Shane down. Oh, baby man. Like, okay, you gotta, like, spend all this time talking your husband down / running interference for him? Not a cute look. They lie in bed together as he explains. I gotta say, in this moment, when Shane explains where he's coming from, I feel so much sympathy for him. You know, I really feel his pain. Because...
No, you don't.
But there's a great explanation for his behavior, Tam.
Oh, is there? It's not in this movie.
Look, this isn't his fault, because this is what Shane says. People have been coming for me my whole life because I'm so privileged. But that's not my fault. And Armand is just another one of those people coming for me. See?
Maybe people are coming for you because you're an asshole, huh? Maybe that's it?
Yeah.
On to something, perhaps, maybe?
Yeah. You're a flaming bag of shit. People try and stomp you out and they just get shit all over themselves. Yeah, no. Rachel tells him, well, I loved our dinner and I thought it was very romantic. Then she grins with the memory and adds, until it wasn't. She tries moving her hand towards him under the blanket, but he pushes it away, saying seriously, don't, I'm not in the mood. She looks a little deflated until he smiles mischievously, says, I'm just kidding. I'm always in the mood. Ew, 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 ew. You're a red, red flag. You're a high flying flag. And then they start getting it on. Across the resort, Olivia and Paula have gone to bed. But as soon as they both close their eyes, Paula is up and out the door. This time, Olivia follows her to find her with the handsome busboy, Kai, having sex in a covered cabana. She looks hurt and heads back to the room, where she will have the room to herself because, once again, Quinn is out on the beach. He has his dad's phone and is jerking off to porn, probably using one of his dad's bookmarked sites. Inexplicably, he drops the phone, stops wanking, and gazes at the ocean, perhaps contemplating all the sex talks he got from his parents throughout the day or the beauty of the setting sun. Regardless of that, both Tamara and I say, "Oh, Quinn, pick up that phone. Didn't you learn your lesson from the other three electronic devices you lost the previous night? ?"
Not again.
The end.
I swear to God, if I had another piece of electronic after I lost my Switch, my phone, and my iPad, I would wear everything like around my neck.
Otter boxes for everything, so it doesn't matter if it gets wet, and leashes, yes. Mm. Okay.
Or that seems more convenient than having a big piece of bling shaped like an iPad on a string that you should be holding a pair of old lady glasses.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's kind of like the newest version of Flava Flav, right? You have the iPad around your neck.
Exactly. It's a new look.
Okay, so Quinn, bad decision dinosaur or good decision gnome?
Quinn just kind of laid there motionless most of the time, which is probably his best bet. I mean, except for when he got pissed off about his electronics, which was fitting. But every other time he's like, I don't know what the fuck to say or do here. So I think he probably knows his parents already and is doing the best he can with what he has. I would say, even though it was not much doing much, it would probably be like above the middle line. So 3.5 good decision gnomes to me.
Yeah. And I would say one bad decision dinosaur for at the end, dropping his dad's phone on the fucking beach afterwards.
He was doing so well up until that point.
Yes. Yes.
You know who I think should get all the good decision gnomes in this episode?
Who?
Dylan. Poor fucking Dylan. Who's just like, sweet baby Jesus. Everything's going to shit around me. I'm just trying to do the best I can. I am on this boat while this woman is wailing into the ocean and this guy looks like he wants to kill me.
Yeah.
And then my boss is trying to get on top of me and telling me how sexy my hair is. And I'm just going to back away, back away, back away, back away, back away, back away, back away.
Yep. And he turns down the drugs. He turns down the alcohol and he's communicating what's going on to. Yes. 5 good decision gnomes for Dylan.
He gets employee of the month in my book. Mm-hmm. He should. They're probably going to give it to Lonnie as compensation for her going into labor her first day, but I think they should give it to Dylan.
Okay, what about Paula and her relationship with Olivia?
I'm going to... So, bad decision dinosaur for Paula because she gets...
I understand her desire to fuck Kai. He's a hot hottie. Yes,
he's so hot. But why are you gaslighting your best friend?
Yeah.
I don't understand that. Like, I really cannot recall if there's something more underlying between them because it just seems strange that she's not coming clean.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then again, same token, like she probably knows her friend better than anybody. So if she does come clean and Olivia like flips the fuck out and then she has to spend the next like, I don't know, 4 or 5 days with a pissed off friend, like that would also be awkward and shitty.
Yeah, that is true. But she is making mad moves and I give her like 5 bad decision dinosaurs.
Also, I'm pretty sure Kai is older, and so I hope that you told him you were 16 so he knows he's fucking somebody that's underage.
Do we know how old they actually are?
They said 16. Olivia and Paula are supposed to be 16, okay. But I don't know how old Kai is. He just gives off an older air.
No, I mean, he's like in his late teens, early 20s. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you want to talk about next?
I know. I feel like I'm coming up with the good decision gnomes and you're coming up with the bad decision dinosaurs. I'm going to say another person that had a bad decision dinosaur day was Armand. 1,000%. He wins hands down.
He wins bad decision, all the bad decision dinosaurs.
All the bad decision dinosaurs that he has in his life could fuel America once they like turned into petrol for years and years to come, because he's just on a shit show spiral. It's going to end badly. You know it is. You just don't know how.
Yeah. And it's not just the drugs and the alcohol, which are bad decisions, particularly when you have a problem with them and are in recovery, but are no longer in recovery from them. It's also his desire to fuck with Shane, which, no, his desire to fuck with Shane is understandable. Him actually fucking with Shane is a bad decision dinosaur move.
And trying to fuck his employee also.
Yes.
Bad, 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 bad.
Yes. Yeah. No.
Don't fuck or fuck with anybody that is in your hotel or on your staff, Armand.
Yeah, if there were to the giant shit-shaped bad decision dinosaur statuette, kind of like the Oscars for this episode, Armand would get it.
Mm. Agreed.
Maybe a close second would, not close second, but maybe in second place would be Mark. Who?
Yes. I was going to say Mark, but then I'm like, oh no, Armand beats him,
yeah,
hands down. But yeah. Mark, not too far behind. Yeah. Don't need to go comatose in front of your family.
No. Nope.
Don't need to regale everyone with your gay father's story. Or try to do some sort of weird, I'm going to regain my sexuality by inappropriately flirting with all the young girls on the island because I'm drunk. Ill.
Also, talking to my son about details about my sex life. Ill.
Yes. Poor, poor Quinn.
And trying to drink all of your meals. Also, not a good idea.
Not ideal. No.
Now we're in bad decision dinosaur zone, though, because, like, you look at Rachel, and she's got the fucking school band waving red flags in beautiful figures all around her in a circle in a musical number. Busby Berkeley is there with the cameras, like, people do designs and shit with their flags, and she's like, I think I hear a little noise or something, but I'm just gonna go over here.
Okay, I'm gonna counter that with, I think, middle of the road, of right smack dab in the middle, because they've made good decisions and they've made bad decisions, but I feel strongly that their center, dead center, and this episode is Tanya McQuad, because although she's still stringing along Belinda, which is fucked, she was like, I'm going to charter a boat. I'm going to scatter my mom's ashes. It's going to be ugly and uncomfortable. Please let everybody know ahead of time. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get drunk. Don't judge me. This is hard.
Yeah.
And so she made lots of good decisions in preparation of it. But her good decisions are always surrounded by some bad decisions. So that puts her straight in the middle for me.
I 100% agree with you. And Nicole just isn't really worth talking about at this moment in time. So
she's not.
No.
She's manic. And she's done plenty of bad things in other episodes to discuss that are more interesting than her being freelance furniture redecorator.
Yeah.
Olivia also doesn't. She's same shit, different day.
Yeah.
Don't need to address or talk about Miss Olivia, because she's pretty much status quo on how she acts and what she does.
Yeah, 100%. So, Tamara, what episode do we have coming up next week?
Next week, we have episode 4, Recentering the Ooh. White Lotus.
Oh, I wonder what we're recentering on.
Oh, I can just imagine. So many things are out of whack.
Plunge pool. I'm always willing to recenter on the plunge pool.
I didn't hear you say that. Yes, yes, you are.
So if you have anything that you would like to say about this episode of White Lotus, Mad Monkey Roleplay Sex.
Mysterious
monkey roleplay sex.
Or mad monkeys. Whatever.
Yeah.
We take both.
You can reach out to us at onedrykiss@gmail.com or on the social medias on Instagram and Facebook, all at onedrykiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you could find the time to rate and review us, we'd really appreciate it, especially Corinne, because it's her birthday and that's a birthday gift,
yes!
The only thing she really wants. But in the meantime, we'd like to thank you for stopping by, and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. See you next time.
See you next time.
Yay! she was just walking around because she couldn't sleep. Mm-hmm. Walking around a penis.